From Glitch HQ on Riverside Avenue in this just in Minneapolis, this is Nice Games Club, the show where nice game devs talk gaming and game development.
I'm Martha McGarry, and I make nice games.
I'm Stephen McGregor, and I make nice games.
And I'm Martha Croy, I too make nice games. In this episode, your nice hosts bring you a Nice Games Bulletin. We discuss the latest news from the broader world of video games, or at least as latest as we are able. And so, if everyone's ready, let's start.
That's what we did last time, right?
Well, now it's a thing.
Yeah. Oh, dang it. Now I have to do it every time.
Every time.
Welcome to the news.
Yes.
With us. All the news that's fit to pod.
We've picked a bunch of things to talk about. But first, we start with new releases, or, you know, somewhat newish.
Yeah.
Because, like, I think Sekiro's been out for a while, but that's on this list.
Well, listeners who may be new to the program should know that our bulletin episodes are basically just what's happened recently.
Yes.
We don't do these every week, so we're going to talk about stuff that we've heard about and is on our minds from the last month or so.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, starting with the new releases, but these aren't in any particular order, but things to note. Sekiro Shadows Die Twice came out, and it I think we'll talk about this later, but like it has launched like a difficulty discussion within game dev Twitter.
Yeah. Isn't it also like the fighting games of Dark Souls of fighting games? Like, or something?
Yeah, actually, kind of, yeah. Mm-hmm. At least that's what I've heard. I haven't played it yet, but
it seems super up your alley.
Yeah, I know.
Don't you have to do lots of like stealth things and stuff like that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was watching a video, which I can't remember which one, so I'm not. Never mind. Never mind.
Okay. Yes. Also, Risk of Rain 2 came out sort of in early access. I've been playing that a lot. That's why I put it.
It looks so cool.
It's really fun.
Tell me about that game.
Yes. So the original Risk of Rain is a 2D platformer, roguelike, where like,
oh, so close. You almost had me.
It's very minimalist art. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And you play as like little tiny, people.
It's like basically Polly Pocket, but a roguelike.
Yeah.
And you fight
like increasingly larger enemies. Uh-huh. And they spawn a ton of them at you.
Yeah.
In this new game, they've somehow managed to transition from 2D to 3D, and it's a third person shooter, but like it still feels very similar to the old game.
Hmm.
I'm surprised at how much. I was really worried about it because I don't normally like shooters, but like with this game, it's basically Risk of Rain, but you got to aim a little bit.
That's interesting because I think the you know, when Mario went from 2D to 3D,
all
the mechanics were new, but it still felt like Mario.
Yeah.
So that sounds like a similar achievement they've done, which is hard to do, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What other series have pulled off that transition?
Yeah, not Sonic hasn't.
I mean, I wasn't gonna say anything.
Someone had to. also, what came out? Yoshi's Crafted World.
I want it.
It looks extremely cute.
Yeah.
Like, I'm afraid of touching it because I might die of cuteness.
Mm-hmm.
yeah.
But basically, the art is all like paper and yarn.
Handcrafted things.
Yeah.
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 It's everything is miniaturized and like the milk cartons are buildings. And,
yeah.
And the central mechanic of the game is that you play through each level twice. Once with the camera forward facing, and then the whole world turns around, and then you look at everything from behind, like behind the scenes, sort of. And so you see all of the little papercraft buildings. You see the reverse of it, where there's no back wall and there's tape holding it down, and sort of like it reveals new ways you can interact with the sort of crafted world.
Oh, that's very so cute. Cool.
Yeah, and Yoshi's this little fuzzy sort of stuffed animal type.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Felted. Oh man, have you guys ever tried needle felting? Just as an aside, it's pretty great. Anyway, continue. Okay. It's very fun. You basically just poke wool until it's a shape.
Ah, hey,
it's great. Anyway, later.
Yes.
That's an aside. Yes. Listeners, you should try it too. It's very fun.
Yeah.
But that's what Yoshi looks like to me. It's like a needle felted thing.
Yeah. Mm.
Which was exciting for me.
Yeah. Another news, Islanders came out.
Yeah, I think it's out. I was reading a Polygon article, which we'll link. They've been doing a lot of like indie game reviews lately, like stuff on Itch, which is really cool.
Yeah.
I've really liked all the articles they've done so far on that. And this Islanders game looks really fun. It looks like it's like a mini like city building civilization type game. Okay. And the art is all like low poly, little cities, and it looks really cute and cool.
Yeah.
Nice. So I'm excited about that.
Hmm.
That's cool. The Labo VR kit is coming in a week.
Yes, real soon, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But of course, I don't care until a couple weeks from now when Mario Odyssey and Zelda get patched.
Yes.
To support it.
Oh, is it not coming out of the same day?
It's not. I don't think it's the same day. Okay. I don't remember offhand, but the announcement had said what it was. We'll put it in the notes.
Yeah. Yes, but yeah, I'm interested in how that's going to go down, because like I think from what I understand, Super Mario Odyssey is going to have like a mini game that supports the VR thing.
Yeah.
Breath of the Wild is going to have like actual VR support.
Just VR mode.
Yeah, where you just watch Link from above, I guess.
And of course,
Makes a lot more sense, because it was like, how are they going to do that?
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Because you can't. Can you do like the teleport movement with just, I suppose you could with just the Switch.
Yeah, but maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I think people's first reaction to learning that, because the video that announced it showed off these little, they call them bite-size experiences for Mario Odyssey.
Yeah.
But then showed off the just clips of Zelda and like that you've seen it, you know, with the third person camera and everything. Mm-hmm. So it's like they didn't even capture new footage specifically, because you can imagine VR games that do third person generally have you as a non-moving observer.
Right.
But for a game like this, if it just fully supports it, you're going to be moving the camera with the right stick, and that's going to maybe be not super perfect, but comfort. The way it looked in the clip they showed it, the camera continued to orbit around Link, which is definitely a no-go for a VR game. So I'm not sure what they're going to do exactly. It might just be that it's just the normal game, including camera orbiting and all of that, like a third-person action game has, but that when you move your head, it also rotates the camera from its actual position. Like, you know what I mean? Simple, which is, I think, fine. I think people would be comfortable. They wouldn't be maybe physically comfortable, but they'd be happy with that.
Yeah.
That's enough. People were also saying like, well, the Switch, this resolution's too low, and you gotta hold this cardboard thing to your face. Like, yeah, but Zelda in VR, so don't complain.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm largely concerned about like how they're going to get the frame rate to be stable, because like Breath of the Wild doesn't run at 60 frames all the time regularly.
Oh yeah, that's true.
It's gonna go into GameCube mode, I think.
That's what they've gotta do. It's gonna have to.
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose like we talked about in the episode where my brother came on to the show to show off some of the VR stuff we were working on at the time. Like if you're not near, like if you're going in Zelda across the plains where there aren't very many things, like I think that would be okay, because as long as you're not moving right next to something, it's usually fine.
Climbing, which is a huge part of that game.
Oh, you're so near that might be a problem.
Might not be awesome.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. Yeah. I'm excited.
Incidentally, I think jumping off a big high cliff or mountain and then gliding all the way down into Hyrule Field will probably feel great.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because you're just moving one direction.
Yeah, so. And there's nothing near you, right? Mm-hmm. And so it'll be very much more like a vehicle simulator, which VR does pretty well, at least in those moments. So I'm super looking forward to it. Like I'm definitely gonna get one of these things.
Yeah.
Like even if it's just an afternoon of novelty, like good enough for me. Like that's cool. I'd love to try it.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Also, The Division 2 came out somewhat recently.
I never know what to feel about that game.
I don't know. It's one of them loot 'em shoot 'ems.
Yeah.
So
there was a great headline I saw. I don't remember who posted it, but I'll dig it up, where someone said, like, oh, The Division 2 has a lot to say, but you can't hear it over the sound of gunfire. I was like, that sounds about right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That game's really, like, both of them are really beautiful, and I love the UI in them. I think I talked in some previous episode about the talk I saw at GDC about the UI development, which, like, sounded so cool.
Yeah.
But you're just shooting citizens. Which, I mean, they're bad, quote unquote, but are they? Should you, as a government agent, be just shooting random people? That's really bad.
It has all the concerns that a Tom Clancy anything has.
Yeah,
pretty much. Yeah,
which is like, okay, I guess I'll just have to put that aside if I actually want to enjoy this thing.
Well,
which is a common feeling in video games.
You like numbers. Got that.
It does.
Is it like numbers flying off of people?
Oh,
like,
I don't
that
know.
Kind
if it
of numbers?
Has that.
Oh,
I mean, like,
yeah.
It's a looter thing. Yeah. So, like, you keep getting random new guns. So I guess they probably would give you numbers.
Yeah.
That'll make it for more satisfying.
The UI is great.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. If you should, if you're interested in that kind of stuff that Martha's bringing up, when The Division, the first one, came out, there were a bunch of GDC talks about a bunch of different elements of its development. So you can go look for those on YouTube, or if you have access to the GDC Vault. check out those old talks because they get into it, I think.
Cool. Let's get into the news. Wingspan is a thing that Martha put on this list.
Oh, yeah.
Explain.
Yes.
So, you know how I've said on this show that I don't like board games?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to have to put that title away too, because this is a board game and I really like it a lot. It's all about birds, mm-hmm. or burbs, as you might say. Uh-huh. And it's really great because it follows Steven's advice that your narrative should match your gameplay and mechanics. And so this doesn't really have a narrative, but each bird, like they're real birds from North America that are featured on all these cards in the game. And the mechanics of how you use the cards match the behaviors that those birds do in real life. So like if you have a bird that stashes food for the winter, you can stash extra food tokens on your bird card. Ooh. But you can't eat them. You can just stash them.
Okay.
And then like there are carnivore birds that like owls and things. And when you play those cards, you can draw cards from the deck and eat any that are smaller than you are in the certain range that they actually would eat.
Yeah.
And then there are cowbird cards, and cowbirds in real life don't actually make nests. They find someone else's nest and then push other eggs out and put their own egg in.
Ruthless.
Yes. And then those birds end up feeding and taking care of and raising the cowbird. So you can... Like there's a mechanic where you lay eggs in the game, and your cowbird card can't lay eggs unless someone else in the game lays an egg.
Oh. That's cool.
Yeah.
So this is a brand new game.
Yes, I think we should probably put it up in new releases.
Well, I was gonna say it's in news because the news is that you like board games.
Yes.
That's the real.
Yes.
That is breaking news, people.
It's so good. Oh man, yeah. And the whole object of the game is to try to like. Just like have lots of birds in your habitats. Mm-hmm. So, which is really cool. And I really like it a lot. And you can, there's like this little birdhouse that you put the dice in to roll the dice for food and stuff. Yeah. Oh man, it's so good. And there's little eggs, like these little eggs that you put on your nest cards and stuff. Uh-huh. And it's so great. And all the cards have like scientific illustrations of the birds on them.
Yeah.
It's so good. And the publisher didn't think that it was
talking for another hour.
No, this is wonderful. But yeah.
But anyway, so it's really hard to get right now because the publisher didn't realize that it was going to be really popular, which I don't understand because
not a bad problem to have.
An amazing game. So yeah, they sold out like immediately.
Okay.
So right now they're in restocking mode, mm-hmm. and we'll probably be out this summer again and at local stores. As soon as May, if you pre-order it.
Cool. So you got to keep tabs on that if you want to get new burb game.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's so good. Yeah. And one of the people who made it was an actual like bird scientist person. So
yeah.
That's why it's so accurate.
Oh, okay. Cool. Awesome. Awesome.
That's so awesome.
Dang, I really want to check that out.
Speaking of board games, mm-hmm. Board game news, our pals at Leader Games.
Oh, yeah.
They're in the midst of a Kickstarter.
Ah.
I believe it's still going on even when this episode comes out. Nope, it's over, but but don't worry because it did really, really well. It $1.7 million for Root, the Underworld expansion.
Goodness.
Yeah, and the original Root, which you know won a bunch of awards, it just won South by Southwest best board game.
Oh my gosh.
It made a big splash at Gen Con last year, and like it's a huge, huge success. Mm-hmm. And that original Kickstarter was like $600,000, and that's off the back of Leader Games' first game, Vast, mm-hmm. which did really well as well, but then Root did even better.
Yeah.
And this expansion, $1.7 million. So fantastic. Made here right in our community.
Yeah. Oh man, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
I'm so happy for them. EA layoffs. I feel like people haven't been talking about this,
mm-hmm.
but it's the same story with Activision, really. A ton of people, I think specifically in like marketing, the marketing field and such, were
redundancies or whatever, right?
Quote unquote, yeah,
right.
Were laid off at EA. So I guess it's like the same story, but I feel like people didn't bring it up very much this mm-hmm. time, or like there was an article and people were like, oh, this is a shame.
Yeah.
This needs to stop happening. And then that was it for the day.
Right. I think the twist with Activision was that it was, it was Blizzard and Activision had actual redundancies.
Yeah.
And so it was there was a greater focus to that story, which is Activision bringing more things in house, you know, efficientizing their it gave it some dimension, something to lock onto that, sure, other than just a bunch of people got fired.
Yeah.
Whereas EA, a bunch of people got fired.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's just sad. And I wanted to bring it up because, like, it keeps happening and we should do something about it. And we're trying to like keep notice on that here on the show, because, like, it's, you know, it keeps people away from the industry. And we try to, you know, we want to promote the industry. So trying to do what we can here. But I don't know, just keep bringing it up, keep mentioning it, know that it's happening.
Yeah.
Tell people about it. Hopefully something can get done. That's all I have to say about it.
Hear, hear.
Yes. Yes. In other news, the Anthem article on Kotaku, this was a huge thing.
Speaking of toxic work environments, possibly.
Yes. Jason Schreier, who has reported on other things happening in other studios.
Like Crunch is his beat.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Isn't he the one who did the Blood, Sweat, Pixels book?
Yep. And yeah, he did a expose on Rockstar for
right on Crunch
too. Yeah,
yeah. And so he did an article on the development of Anthem and, like, how the BioWare was seemed very waffly about, like, what they wanted the game to be until about a year before the game came out.
Mm-hmm.
And so it
which is, like, way fast, like way too little time. Yes. For a triple A game.
Oh yeah, the game was in development for 8 years, I believe. Really, it only came together in that last year. And, like, by came together, I mean started production and finished production within a year. And this was supposed to be like their triple A huge game. Like, the codename for the game was Dylan because they wanted it to be like the Bob Dylan of video games.
Yeah. Which it was this sort of aspirational idea.
Yeah.
But this was before loot shooters even existed.
Yeah.
They were like, we want our next thing to be the Bob Dylan of video games, the thing, yeah, that people reference and refer to all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, like, I mean, it's, you know, it's hubris, obviously. But yeah, imagine if the game was great, we'd have thought we'd have thought upon that story differently, that very visionary.
It's very true.
But there's something almost sort of innocent and charming about that kind of goal.
Yeah.
You know?
Well,
but that ultimately was the problem.
Yeah.
They didn't have enough concrete plans.
Exactly. They wanted something to be great, but they didn't know what it was that they wanted to be great.
They just believed in themselves.
Yeah.
In a way. And then had enough runway to
believe.
Yeah. Yeah. And they kept bringing in, Jason brought up in the article several times about, like, BioWare magic. Like, mm-hmm, everything will come together in the end.
Yeah.
And that's, like, kind of a scary thought when you're developing a thing for 8 years and you as a, you know, just a worker is like, hey, is this game okay? Or is this going to work all right? And everybody up top is like, yeah, it's going to work just fine.
Mm-hmm.
When in reality, it's not well, working out okay.
It sounded like they were also hampered by the technology that EA, because they were bought up by EA.
Yeah.
That EA was, like, making them use because they all had to use the Frostbite engine or whatever.
That's true. Oh, yeah. But, you know,
Frostbite apparently has been a big problem for a lot of the EA studios.
Yeah.
It was a corporate mandated decision to use this engine.
Yeah. But I came away from that article thinking that, you know, EA in this scenario was not the bad guy. Because, like, aside from the engine thing, they, yeah, didn't really do anything to, like, I feel like this was mainly BioWare's.
Oh, yeah, yeah, fault. And the story is really clear about. Well, what's interesting about it is, mm-hmm, that it no one really comes off as a villain exactly.
Yeah.
And the response from BioWare, which was hilariously posted before the article was out,
yeah,
and they didn't have enough time. They didn't read the article. Mm-hmm. It's fairly obvious. It was just basically like, oh, we don't approve. We don't like things that tear down individuals. And they tried to spin it as like, oh, because a bunch of people are named in the article,
mm-hmm,
that it's this sort of like hit piece.
Yeah.
And it's obviously a mischaracterization. But right. But more than that, the article really does humanize even the bad actors.
Yeah.
It really, you totally understand where it went wrong, why it went wrong. And I can't imagine someone coming away from that with any, like, hate in their hearts for the people who made these mistakes. Mm. As much as you would, you know, you'd want them, you know, to be.
You want someone want to blame.
Them to take into account.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a story of people. And it's, mm-hmm, really, really fascinating.
Yes. Yes. So definitely check it out.
You've all probably all read it already.
Yes. But if you haven't,
it's in the show notes.
Yes. Martha, I'll let you take this one.
I'm going to pass the microphone. What?
I want to turn my headphone volume down first before we start this. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to pass the mic to someone else. Because I think she can say it better.
Uh-oh.
Mark Thoreau's here to tell you about the next coolest game in video game history. It's called Borderlands 3, and it's going to be amazing and awesome, and I'm very excited for it. Okay, back to everyone else.
Yes.
There's going to be lots of guns and shooting, and it's going to be great, and lots of explosions and numbers flying everywhere.
Yep, yep.
There's lots of cool new character classes to play, and lots of cool new environments, and it looks just like Borderlands 2, which is really all we all ever wanted anyway.
Yes. Also guns that walk, I guess.
Also guns that have legs and walk, and it's gonna be great. Okay, I'm done for reals this time.
Yeah.
Whoop, 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 whoop.
Yeah. That was wonderful. Thanks, Martha.
You're welcome.
Yes, Borderlands 3 is coming this year, in fact, right?
I'm so excited.
I think they leaked that it was supposed to come out in August or something. I feel like something. Got, I can't remember. Well, I don't know. It'll be out this year at the very least, right? Yeah, and it looked, and I mean, I'm excited for it too. I like the other Borderlands games, and I specifically like this one because I always play as the Siren characters. And finally, they added a Siren character that just has a bunch of fists and punches things. And that's how I played all the other Siren characters. So, like, this is my home now.
Wait, you played, like, Maya punching people?
I think.
That's hilarious. I mean, that would totally work.
Yep.
That's really funny.
It must have, because I did okay. But this game is going to be an Epic Store exclusive for the first 6 months it's out.
Yeah.
Which has caused a lot of internet shenanigans.
Yes, because it always does. yeah, a lot of people were review bombing Borderlands 2 and 1 because Borderlands 3 is not coming out on their preferred platform.
Right, and review bombing, if people don't know that term, it's like a relatively new term, but it's fairly self-explanatory.
Yeah.
Just giving a bunch of bad reviews all at once on Steam specifically.
Yes, right. Yeah, this is only a Steam issue. But Steam came and actually is doing something about it and like canceled the review bomb or something.
Well, they instituted a policy after I don't know if it was direct result, but Metro Exodus they had a similar issue when it was announced, and Valve handled all that terribly. We talked about it on the show a while back, actually in our last bulletin, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Sometime after that, either as a result or guided by that, announced this policy of like, oh, when we algorithmically detect review bombs, we will we give the developer some tools to hide the reviews, and it becomes more of a like, okay, we have a problem, now we can be a little more hands-on to actually do something about it.
Yeah.
And this seems to be the first instance of that system kicking into gear to sort of help Borderlands like it needs it,
you know? Yeah. But I mean, it's hopeful that other games that are review bombed that are not as popular and big as Borderlands maybe will be helped by this. I don't know what to feel about any of it, because like, on one hand, I understand people being upset that it's going to be on Epic, because Epic's not necessarily any better than Steam, but
by all accounts, the experience is much worse. Like, it doesn't have a lot of the features or anything, which is, it's brand new, of course it's not going to have as good of an experience,
right?
You know, so people who are just, they feel inconvenienced by it, you know, not just having to buy it at another store, like, you know, tying the violin for that, but the other features that you get from, you know, having something on Steam.
I had a tiny violin around here somewhere. Yeah, but even that, so you shouldn't go and review bomb a thing. So right. I don't agree with that at all.
Mm-hmm. The problem is that the review bombing here in this case is people who are like super fans of Steam.
Right.
So, you know what I mean? And so, interestingly, it's like, and we know that Valve is bad at this. Mm-hmm. Like, their response to Metro Exodus, I'm still steamed about, like, to use a phrase. Yeah. I'm still upset with, like, the way that they just publicly posted this, like, basically a lie about, like, the situation to that game's page. Like, it's just absolute terrible abuse of their platform. Mm-hmm. But the fact that they are the ones now in charge of tamping down, you know, their own super fans who are protecting Steam from Epic's invasion or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, it just seems like all this conflict of interest. And not that I don't trust them to use this system. And like, I don't think it's good for them to let these reviews stand. Mm-hmm. But it just seems like I just have a hard time caring one way or another whether that system works or not. Do you know what I mean? Review bombing is going to hurt much more indie games right. that get bad press yeah. or have there's a thread on Reddit which tells them to disagrees with the developer's views uh-huh. or something. And once the system benefits a developer like that,
yeah.
then I will take it seriously.
Yeah. Yeah. yeah the first one just that benefits just happens to be because Epic Store is a little suspicious.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's swooping into defense of Gearbox Software. Like, I don't care. I just don't care. Like, yeah. those people don't need the help. And maybe it's like testing the system out in the wild, but with actors where none of it matters is probably good.
That's true.
But that is actually a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm honestly kind of glad that Borderlands 3 is coming out on Epic because, like, then more people will. It's competition against Steam.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is, yeah. I mean, the good thing about it.
Yeah. I think we sort of all came to a consensus that, like, Epic's existence as a storefront is good,
mm-hmm.
regardless of, like, them specifically. We're not supporting Epic.
Yeah.
But just that competition is really valuable.
Yeah. And I mean, there have been other storefronts, but they've all been developer specific. Like, Origin is EA specific games,
yeah.
things like that. But the Epic store is supposed to be for, you know, other things, not just Epic games.
Yeah. And which is interesting because, like, they have an engine and they're a publisher. And, right. you know, one day long ago, Valve used to be that too.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
So maybe we're looking at the future of Epic games, you know?
Perhaps.
Like, the Fortnite will run forever, just like Counter-Strike runs forever.
Mm-hmm.
But then there'll be, maybe?
Yeah. That could be it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I want to ask you, Martha, about, we've talked on the show before, Borderlands is your favorite video game.
Yes.
Like, that series is a favorite. But in the past year or so, lots of news about Gearbox's founder, Randy Pitchford.
Yeah.
I can't imagine
about those too, because the guy making all those things sounds real crazy. Like the guy suing him or whatever
mm-hmm.
sounds a little bit office rocker also. So,
well, I can't imagine you defending Randy Pitchford in these stories. It's absolutely wild. But then this is your favorite game.
Yeah. I've had struggles about that. It's hard to know.
Yeah. And I mean, sometimes your love of a thing can give you blind spots. And if you know that, then maybe you can just be fine with that.
Yeah. I mean, I just see it that so many of the people have made a game. It's not like you hate all Pixar things because John Lasseter is a really awful person.
Yeah. I mean, it's easier for me because I'm not into Borderlands. So I can just easily say, like, well, you know, I don't need to give it a second thought.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I feel like sort of conflicting. I don't know. I feel like emotional conflict with this stuff too, because, like, maybe somebody made this thing that I really like, but I don't like the person.
Yeah.
How do I balance that? Should I support the thing? Even if I really like the thing, is it worth it? I don't know. There's a lot of questions you have to ask.
Yeah. Yeah.
This isn't exactly news because it's not new news, but, like, we want to talk about it anyways because we didn't get a chance to talk about it during the GDC special. But Google Stadia, am I pronouncing that correctly? Mm-hmm. Okay. is...
I like to say Stadia because it sounds Swedish to me.
It looks like Stadia or Stadia. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Anyways, it's a thing. It exists. Google is trying a new streaming service that doesn't have a lot of details still.
Yeah.
But you'll be able to like play AAA games and stuff on any device. And you'll stream directly from, like, Google's cloud or whatever it is.
that's basically the impression. Yeah. That's all the details.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. We should talk about that. We didn't get a chance to talk about it at GDC, but we have opinions. I think that, like, in general, this is fine. I think that it's gonna be like for a weird audience though, because it's gonna be for people who don't have access to they don't have access to, like, a high quality PC.
Mm-hmm.
So they can play all these fancy games or consoles. Because I think, like, Assassin's Creed is announced on it, right? The newest one, Odyssey.
I think so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be for people who have high quality internet and will be able to stream this service. Because if you have a really bad connection, then, like, there's not really going to be a point in playing it because you're just going to lag a bunch of during the playtime. So, like, that won't be worth it for you.
They did make an effort to talk about how it will scale down in terms of resolution and quality for different internet speeds.
Yes.
And the goal, anyway, is to be able to get a at least 720 style HD stream.
Okay.
For people with you know standard U.S. residential internet. Without needing like a you know which isn't to say there won't be drops or whatever, or isn't to say that there won't be a successful rollout.
Yeah.
Because you know how these things go, but they're trying to make it clear that they're not just pitching it to people with fiber or with commercial internet.
Right. And so in that way, I think that it's a good thing because like it allows it to be accessible to people who can't, who either don't want fancy computers or cannot afford fancy computers. And they have decent internet, which I think most people have, a lot of people anyways, have decent internet.
Well, I mean, that I think in the city, but if you get out into the boonies,
that's true.
Gets harder and harder to get proper internet and then harder and harder to have any choice in which internet you get.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Also true.
There's not as many providers out in the countryside. So.
Right. But yeah, it does make it accessible for people who, they can't get those things, but they have a decent internet, which I think is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But aside from that, I don't know, like that audience specifically seems very small to me.
You think so?
I think so.
I think the thing that interests me about it is like you described, that sort of democratizing influence. And I think the audience who would pick that up and become part of that hardcore AAA gaming audience, I think it's a potential waiting to be tapped.
Okay.
Because you think about the people who are, you know, like PC gamers, sure. right?
Yeah.
It's people who can, who not only have the time, but the money and the resource allocation to like build a beefy gaming rig and be part of that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, which isn't to say you couldn't get a cheap computer and play, you know, games on. But the community, the culture of it is built around those people who can do that, who are more part of that. And then what that means is that the games that are made and marketed are made and marketed for those people.
Right.
And so I think having access to AAA experiences where all you need is, the $60, more like the $80 controller and like a Chromecast capable something.
Sure.
Which is a much broader range of the public. I think that means those people can then participate in that culture with fewer barriers.
Sure, yeah.
And then it may take a while, and it may not be Google the one to make this successful, but then that means that games can be made and marketed to those people, which is everybody.
Yeah.
And that's a big thing we've talked about on this show. Like, more games, more people making games, more people playing games makes all games better.
Yeah.
And I think this is like the... I don't think enough people are... It's very Pollyannish and it's very optimistic, but I think that is the reason I'm excited about
this. Sure. Yeah, I guess I'm just less optimistic about that possibility in this instance.
Right. You're not sure if they build it, people will come.
I'm not sure if Google builds it, people will come.
Yeah.
But I think I'm really excited about all of that you brought up.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't necessarily think that this is the time or I guess right for this to happen.
Uh-huh.
That's I guess my thought. I'm more pessimistic about it taking off at this moment.
I don't like it because it then removes another like level of ownership of things. Like now that we have all these different things that let you not have attachment to one storefront on PC, like if you want chat stuff, you have Discord and Slack and all these other things, so you don't need Steam for that. You don't need Steam for a lot of the things, so there should be more DRM free games that you can buy, and this would not let you, like, they haven't even announced how you would be paying for this because it wouldn't be free,
right? Yes.
So
that's a huge problem.
And like how would you get access to the games? Like, it would be a monthly thing, or do you have to pay for each game and then only get access to it for a certain amount of time?
It seems that those aren't answered questions, but it seems likely, at least from the reporting that's been done, is that the access to the service will be free, but no games will be free. But then you will pay for games. The question is like, and you know, you spend $60 on a AAA game, then you need to rely on the existence of that service.
Yeah.
It's different from say Netflix, whereas Netflix goes down, you're like, oh, well, I didn't lose my copy of this or that.
Yeah.
You know, which is, it's almost psychological in a sense. Mm. But there's an interesting model for this exact thing, which is in Japan, Assassin's Creed Origins.
Where they have ubiquitous, very good internet.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There is a service that streams games to the Switch. So Final Fantasy, maybe 13, I don't remember. And an Assassin's Creed Odyssey, which is the game that Google used to test its service last fall. Mm-hmm. Those are out on Switch. You can get those games on Switch.
Weird.
They're streaming. Mm-hmm. And you pay the full price for them, but you have access for something like 720 days.
Oh.
So basically, the rough life, it's a reasonable amount of time. If I buy a AAA game, I don't expect to need it for that long.
Yeah.
And maybe I'd be like, oh, it's not mine, but like, ultimately, the value proposition isn't anyway. But that gives them an ability to not have to guarantee the existence of the service forever.
Yeah.
Right. And so I'm really curious. And that seems like something that I don't think American consumers will be that excited about, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Even if it ultimately wouldn't be a problem, you know.
Well, there's also the fact that there are supposed to be Google Stadia exclusives, and so if these exclusives exist in a similar fashion, then if Google ever decides they don't want to do the service anymore, these games are no longer available for people to play.
Right.
And or to archive.
Yeah, exactly.
And so then we lose them forever.
Yes. Yeah. And so I think that's also a problem. I mean, in the same vein, like I still every once in a while will take my N64 and play Super Smash Brothers on it.
Yeah.
So like not being able to play the game 5 years down the line wouldn't be great.
I mean, I don't disagree.
Yeah.
There's sort of you balance these things, but also we sort of already live in that world. Like famously the story of PT, the demo that was on PlayStation and you could download to your hard drive, right?
Yeah.
But when they stopped offering it and stopped letting you re-download it when you were licensed for it, it was free. So there was no concern about any retribution from consumers.
Yeah.
But that isn't, you just cannot get that anymore.
Right.
And the truth is like how it, like Konami has the copyright to it. We've talked about copyright on the show before.
Yeah.
And so like in terms of like preservation and historical archiving, like that, those are separate issues, I think, from consumer rights.
Sure.
Necessarily. And so the Stadia is definitely not the answer to any of that. Like all of that is totally up in the air. Like, but is that the cost of having, you know, of being able to provide access to a broader base of people?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But you know, as long as maybe if every game maker went that way, then I would be a little more worried about it.
I don't know how many exclusives they're planning on having. I guess also, like, there's just a lot of questions because we don't know how the service is going to even be given. So.
Right. It might be a marginal monthly cost plus the thing of it might not be a good value for people.
Yeah.
Right. It might end up being back into the hands of that same audience.
Right.
And maybe they do that on purpose so that they can get more tech literate consumers with beefier machines and better internet.
Yeah.
So they can expect a better service, in which case what's the point of it anyway?
Yeah. You know? Yeah, exactly. Yep. A lot of questions.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the thing.
But like I said before, when we talked about it on the show, I'm just excited about a new controller. I love controllers. Like,
yeah.
And that one looks nice.
Yeah, it does look nice.
I want to press all those buttons. Like,
yeah, we can all be excited about a controller. Mm-hmm. I like that.
I'll be curious to see like what if it's a Chromecastable device, or could you just plug it in your computer and use it like a PC controller? These are things that's fascinating to me.
Yeah.
Like actually how they will distribute that hardware and how it will be received. Like, you know, what's the setup process? Like, it's all fascinating to me. Like, the user experience of it.
I'd like to hear about that too.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. In other news, Sekiro, it came out and people, every time a Dark Souls game comes out, the game dev Twitter is like, can you add an easy mode?
Yeah. And this is a From Software game.
This is a From Software game.
It's not just like Dark Souls. It's made by the people.
Yes.
Okay.
People have been discussing back and forth whether or not this game should have a difficulty mode or difficulty settings or if it's good, if it's accessible and all of these things. I guess I personally get tired of this discussion because I feel like a lot of the times people are misconstruing difficulty with accessibility in a lot of instances, where people are like, you should make an easy mode so more people can access it and more people like with physical disabilities can play the game. And that's not necessarily what the difficulty mode is for. You should add accessibility settings to allow people to play the game and not necessarily difficulty settings.
And you're in the corner whispering, get good.
No, but I will say that I think that like sometimes with particular games, and I think a lot of times with some From Software games, the difficulty is a part of the experience. And so like if you can tune the difficulty so that it is still a challenging experience and it makes sense for the narrative and gameplay that they're trying to portray.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be a good thing. But I also want to bring up that like adding difficulty settings is not just a switch you just turn on. You have to like work on it. And it would take maybe a few months of, you know, iteration and development and testing in order to implement it, which I don't think is something people bring up either. I don't think that people are like asking for an easy mode and expecting it to be done within a couple of days.
Yeah, the discussion is excluding the what would it take.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That is a lot of time how it is approached. But I don't know. I just get kind of tired of it because it just it happens every time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they haven't listened every time. Like if this happened for Dark Souls,
right.
That was came out a long time ago. So in planning this game, like we were talking about in the accessibility episode, they probably should have done a little bit more thinking about like, oh, maybe what they're saying is like, you know, not everybody's getting a chance to play this game, even to make a challenge. Like you were saying, like, having a mode where you, like in Celeste, you can either play on regular or you can play on a mode where at any time in the game, you can switch things on and off and like, make the timing slower. Or the things have to be less precise, and that's something they, if they had thought about it, could have added in easier.
Well, I mean, yeah, I'm not positive on this, but I think like Celeste was probably built with those in mind.
Yeah, exactly. Like maybe they should have thought of that, given all the feedback they've gotten before.
And I'm sure that they probably did have those discussions. But frankly,
they can afford not to have those considerations.
That's also true.
they had a pretty much a guaranteed hit on their hands.
Yeah, that is very true. But I also think that like they weighed the costs and benefits of spending a couple of months, a few months developing assist mode like things for the game or adding more content to the game. They decided to add more content, which I mean I don't know. And this is within their right to do, but it does make it that like other people are not able to access the game because of various reasons, and it shouldn't necessarily just be about like the difficulty of it. But I feel like a lot of times there are like the two camps. One person or one camp is trying to ask for an easy mode because they want to be able to play the game for a variety of reasons. Maybe it's too difficult for them and they don't want to deal with the challenge. Which I mean, that's fine. It's physically harming to play the game at the level that the developers expect you to, which, is an accessibility issue.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there are this other camp that I think is largely about, like, they want the game to still feel difficult, and still feel challenging, and other people to experience that difficulty and challenge when they play the game, because that, is an experience that they want other people to share. And by this, I'm talking about, like, the audience. An audience is asking for the other audience, other people who are trying to play the game to experience this as well.
Right.
I mean, also there are people in the camp who are like, you're good, but like, I'm not interested in talking about that.
I'm definitely of two minds about whether there should be an easy mode. I think like in Celeste, I think someone I saw on Twitter proposed like just slowing down time. Just, you know, would be a relatively easy design solution with implementations on the matter to make the game feel the same with still those caveats, right?
Yeah.
With being able to, but so I have two in mind. One is like, sure, go ahead. You don't ruin the game by making a different version of it, right?
Exactly.
And so again, apart from what it takes.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I'm sympathetic to the argument, which is if a game is difficult, then getting to the end is sort of rarefied in terms of the experience.
Yeah.
And that is part of the experience.
Right.
Is I beat the game and I saw the cutscene. And I can watch it on YouTube or whatever, but like that matters in a sense to players' overall experience.
Yeah.
I'm somewhat sympathetic to that, mainly from the developer perspective.
Yeah.
If I'm a developer and I want to provide something like that, that gives the gift of that rare experience to the people who quote unquote earn it.
Yeah.
And these are just like, it's just video games, people.
Yeah. But,
then I would have a hard time giving that up.
Yeah.
Even in service of things that, like, obviously the difference between accessibility and difficulty,
right.
But even in the service of that, I'd have to have that discussion. Like, what does that mean to be able to just let people have it when the big sort of feeling of the game is about withholding it from
those are the arguments specifically that I will entertain.
Get good. I'm not interested in that.
Yeah, I don't.
Because the game is fighting game mechanics, I'm automatically against it. Mm-hmm. Like, so I, so I'm just like, fine, make an easy mode so we can watch the fun cutscenes. Like, yeah. I am very sympathetic to those arguments.
Sure. As well. Yeah. Yeah. That's the main thing is like, I think that myself included, if I were to play the game, I would like to experience that difficulty. And I would like other people who I'm talking with and discussing the game with to experience their form of difficulty that still falls in line with the experience that the developers wanted.
Yeah.
But I mean, also at the end of the day, it's a game and like you can mod it so that it's easier.
Right.
So, and I think in fact, there is an easy difficulty mod for Sekiro. So like
already.
Yeah. So okay. There's that. Like once you own the game, it's yours unless you streamed it and it's not yours.
And you can't mod it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I'm never going to use Stadia then. I need to mod it. Yes.
Well, that's our show. If you haven't already, subscribe to Nice Games Club in your favorite podcast app and be sure to give it a good review if you liked it or are nice like us. We got a bunch of new listeners from our adventures in GDC. So welcome new listeners.
Yay!
Hey. But you know, if you really want to be part of the clubhouse, got to give us that review.
Yeah.
Go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you review your podcasts and give us a nice old review because you're real nice and we're real nice and we really, I'm not begging, but please. we also hear directly from you. So follow us on Twitter and all the other things at Nice Games Club. And you can email us at contact@nicegamesclub.com if you have topic suggestions, you have maybe people you want us to try to interview.
Yes.
You have complaints about the things that Steven said on this episode.
Yes.
We can receive all of those. contact@nicegames.club. Yeah. And lastly, you can find out more about the show, your nice hosts, as well as get all the links and notes from this and other episodes at nicegames.club. And so until we start again, remember to
play nice
and make nice.
That's the news.
Is that the news? That's all the news that's what did you say, Martha?
Fit to pod. Mm-hmm.
Do we have any news that's not fit to pod?
We can't fit that on the pod.
Oh, of course.
Right.
Yeah. Silly me.
'Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.